You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When David Basmaskis' first book, Natasha and Other Stories, was published in 2004, it received rave reviews, won numerous literary awards, and then he was named one of the New Yorker magazine's 20 Under 40 last year. His debut novel, The Free World, is just out from Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased it has brought Mr. Basmaskis back to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
When you were here last year to talk about the 20 Under 40 collection, you said that you hadn't originally planned to write a novel. So what happened here? Did this book begin as a short story or a series of linked short stories as the previous one, but then turn out to be a novel as you were writing it?
I guess what I meant by I didn't originally set out to write a novel was when I thought about myself as a writer, I never thought I would write a novel. So the stories, that seemed natural to me. And after I finished those, I had this idea, which seemed like a much larger idea, that seemed like the sort of thing that could only be realized in a novel and couldn't have worked with stories.
Well, I'm sure your agent and your publisher were happy because they prefer novels, don't they?
They do prefer novels. They say readers prefer novels. Is that true?
Well, I like short stories if they're written by Alice Munro and people who know how to write short stories. Flannery O'Connor never let me down. Then there are other people who are better at novels. You said that you always write toward the last line. Did that apply here as well? Did you know what the last line was going to be?
I knew where the book would end, meaning I knew where the book would start and where the book would end sort of in broad terms, which is, you know, the family departs and before they leave Italy, Rome. And I had a sense of how it would end. It ends in the sort of oblique way. And it helps me to know what the ending is going to be.
Natasha and Other Stories followed a family of Latvian Jews, the Burmans, as they settled in Toronto. Your biography says that you were born in Riga, Latvia in 1973 and emigrated with your parents to Toronto in 1980. Did your family spend several months stuck in Rome waiting for visas to go either to the United States or Canada like the Kresnanskis in this novel?
Soviet Union in 1978 and spent 4 months in Rome on our way to what turned out to be Canada, which isn't where we thought we were going to begin with.
You thought you'd come to the United States first?
First we thought we were going to Australia. Then it turned out we'd reconsidered. My parents thought we were going to go to Atlanta. And ultimately we ended up in Canada.
And you left with the understanding that you'd go to Israel.
Well, we left sort of with ostensible understanding that everybody was going to Israel. That was kind of like a shadow play that was being performed in the Soviet Union. Jews couldn't leave the Soviet Union unless they were going to Israel.
And you actually dealt with that in one of the short stories in Natasha, where Mark Berman says that they didn't want to really go to Israel because there were 150 million angry Arabs there. Was that the reason? Were people afraid that Israel would be dangerous?
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like an epigrammatic way of saying it. But yeah, for the Soviet Jews, I think a lot of it had to do with the history of the Soviet Union and Soviet Jews. They lost so many people in the Second World War. The Jews lost people, you know, because of the Holocaust and also because a lot of men died at the front. And I think it was terrifying to go to another country and lose another generation.
How did you wind up, or not just you, but a lot of people in Italy? Is it just that Italy always winds up with a lot of immigrants? Right now they're contending with a flood of immigrants from North Africa.
As far as I understood it, the reason that all these immigrants went through Italy is because the largest American embassy in Europe is in Rome. And since most of these Russian Soviet Jews are going to end up in the U.S., they were going to be processed there, and then everything happened out of Rome for that reason.
Well, isn't Rome a place where many people would choose to live?
I think Rome is a place that many people – I would still choose to live there. I spent a little bit of time.
But these characters feel like they're trapped there.
Well, they do and they don't. I mean, as a matter of fact, they are trapped there. But then, you know, you can be trapped in Italy or you can be trapped in Siberia. So, yeah, certainly being in Rome provided them opportunities that they'd never had before and never even thought they would have.
Although they have to instantly learn how to get by to game the system. They must have had some sense of how that part of capitalism worked when they were in Riga. But was this a matter of culture shock?
I think it was a tremendous matter of culture shock. They didn't know very much. Some letters would go back and forth from people who had already left to try to give advice to people who were planning to leave. But it was tremendous culture shock. It was, you know, the time of the Iron Curtain, where Soviet people had a very, very vague sense of what happened in the West.
How much do you actually remember of this? I suspect you had to actually research some of the aspects of your own life in writing the novel.
I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I was there. I remember not very much of it. And so it was this, you know, this process of trying to figure out what that experience was like, talking to people, researching it as well.
And a lot of the book also takes place in Riga, in Latvia. Again, were these family stories or were these things that you just researched and worked out as fiction?
I mean, it's all fiction. And as with the work that I've done, the root of it, there's some, you know, anecdotal something that gets me going, some bizarre detail that I think is compelling. And then the fiction gets spun out of that.
David Bezmoskis is my guest. His latest book is a novel called The Free World. And some reviewers have remarked on the fact that the first book was about immigration. This one is about emigration. Do you see this novel as a prequel in some ways to the short stories?
Well, I see this novel and the short stories as companion pieces. In the short stories, I was very aware that I was telling the story of the Soviet emigre experience in North America, which I hadn't seen anybody write about. But then there's everything that came before. And so who are these people? Where did they come from now that they've landed on North American shores? And that's what this book is supposed to do.
Well, when the book opens, the Krasnanskis are planning to go to Chicago, where a relative has agreed to sponsor them. When they arrive in Rome, they learn that's no longer a possibility. Was Canada welcoming to these Jews who were leaving the various parts of the Soviet Union?
Yeah, Canada was welcoming once they let you in. I mean, it was a process of getting accepted. But you were, you know, it was the Jewish communities that took responsibility for these Jewish emigres once they arrived. I think that was true in New York. It was also true in Canada.
Several reviewers have commented that this book is at least as much about characters, plot, if not more. Maybe you can introduce us to some of the members of the Krasnansky family. We're talking three generations here. But the story centers on the patriarch, Samuel, S-A-M-U-I-L, and then his sons, Alec and Carl.
So the way the book is told, it's actually told in three voices. If it centers on anybody, I think Alec, who is Samuel's youngest son, the book begins with him and it ends with him. Mm. But I think it's divided equally into three parts. So Alec is the youngest son. Samuel is the father, who is a communist who didn't want to leave the Soviet Union. And then the third voice is Alec's wife, who is Russian but not Jewish. In fact, Latvian and Belarusian and not Jewish, who comes along and she tells her part of the story.
Samuel is a Red Army veteran, actually a functionary. Why does he leave if he doesn't want to, if he's a believer and remains a believer?
He's forced to leave. Once his family leaves, he's disgraced. So if everybody's leaving, as it happened in the Soviet Union, if you were a party member and your children applied for immigration, it was tremendous disgrace. You would be denounced and you could be fired from your job, the whole thing. So for him, he's disgraced at home and everybody's leaving. And he's, for him, it's a choice. Do I stay here in disgrace or do I just accept it and leave?
Alec and Carl, unlike their father, are not believers. They welcome the special anniversaries of communist victories because it means a day off from work. Is that typical generation to generation? I don't know about whether Riga, Latvia is typical of the rest of the Soviet Union anyway, but was it typical in Riga?
It was typical, and I think it was typical across the Soviet Union, generationally speaking. So for people who came of age during the Khrushchev thaw and subsequently under Brezhnev, nobody really believed anymore. So that sense of purpose, of revolutionary purpose, didn't exist anymore because people saw the system for what it was, which was a fraudulent system.
There are also children, 5 and 7, I'm assuming, kind of based on you. Were you as oblivious of all of the family dramas going on around you as Carl's son seemed to be?
I don't know. I think less oblivious. You know, I spend very little. The children are there to represent, you know, this future generation that you can see that is going to grow up in the West. I don't spend very much time on them. But I was aware. I was aware. I mean, I saw how much of a struggle it was, all of this, and also how disorienting it was.
Russian or Latvian was your first language.
Russian.
Do you still speak Russian?
Yes.
You ever consider writing in Russian? Do you think that it's there in the back of your head when you're writing English?
It's definitely there in the back of my head when I'm writing English, particularly dialogue. So whenever characters are speaking to each other, and the way the book is constructed, everybody's speaking Russian to each other for the most part. I hear it in Russian first and then translate it in my head into English.
The heart of the story is the relationship between Alex and his wife, Polina, who isn't Jewish. They began the relationship while Polina was married to another man, and Alex kind of convinced her to leave, which was a big mistake on her part. When a marriage is as complicated as theirs, does the strain of immigration make it even harder for them to make it work?
I think so. But in a sense, their marriage was enabled by immigration. I mean, it wouldn't have happened. As you read the book, you see that, you know, the role of leaving the Soviet Union plays a large role in their actual marriage. But, you know, people's marriages broke up. There were a lot of affairs in Rome and in Italy, as I learned in talking to people, because it was such a tumultuous time. It was, you know, people were liberated, which in a sense, and sometimes liberates you to do things that that may not be so good for you.
Well, the title of your book is The Free World, and that could be seen as either something literal, ironic, or sarcastic.
I think it's in there. It's in the title, you know, the subtext of it. And it's also, you know, chronologically, for the period, apt. We no longer talk about the free world the way we used to. You know, the American president was the leader of the free world. Very rarely does the American president call himself that anymore, or people refer to him as that, because that break between, you know, the Iron Curtain and the West didn't exist. But this term, I think, also, you know, bespeaks a time that no longer is.
Well, we also are less sure that any place is a free world, and that includes Canada.
You know, I will
say, strikes me as a rather tolerant country on the whole.
It is a tolerant country. If we're comparing, you know, the free world against the Soviet Union, uncategorically, it's better. It's freer. You know, if we're comparing it to Cuba or North Korea, I think we can still say the free world without too much irony.
After you went to McGill University in Montreal, you went to USC for an MFA in film, which would suggest that that's what you thought you'd be working in?
You know, I'd wanted to write, but I come from an immigrant background, and to try to explain to my parents what that meant was very difficult. So we kind of arrived at this, you know, very strange compromise that I would go to film school, which seemed kind of like a career where, you know, there were professions. But it would enable me to do something creative while at the same time seeming practical, not really practical.
Well, a lot of writers, a lot of novelists also work on screenplays. Is that something you plan to do?
It's something I plan to do. It's something I've done. I mean, I directed a film a couple of years ago, and it's, you know, even though I arrived at the film school kind of in a compromise, I learned a craft and a trade, and it's something I actually really enjoy.
Well, a book like The Free World may be too complicated to too many things going on to translate to film, but you could take one of the short stories from Natasha and make that into a film. Are you tempted?
Well, that's one of the things I'd like to do, is to adapt Natasha. So that's actually on the horizon. Though, you know, it's funny you say that about adapting The Free World. I think it says more about where we are right now as a cinema culture than it does about cinema, because there was a time when, you know, Dr. Zhivago would have been made, and, you know, David Lean would make these, you know, massive productions.
And leave out a lot of the plot.
That's inevitable. But by the same token, leave out a lot, but keep a great deal in, and, you know, this big sweeping scope to it. We see less of that now.
We'll give you a chance to go to Rome. That would be nice. David Bismaskis' latest book is The Free World. It is published by Farris, Straus & Giroux, and his name is spelled B-E-Z-M-O-Z-G-I-S. Thank you so much for being with us again.
A real pleasure. Thank you.